But I wanted to bring on our first guest today after I read the great story on The Reformer. Welcome onto the show, Anita Talsma Gall. She has deep roots in rural Minnesota. She grew up on the family farm in Murray County, which is in southwestern Minnesota. Her father and youngest brother currently operate the farm. She's only called upon every once in a while to help pick rock in the spring. We will find out about what that is. I know what that is, actually, but I'm going to let her explain for everyone else. After leaving the area to obtain her degrees in history, she moved back to southwest Minnesota, although she never intended to. And in 2007, she's now a history instructor at a local community college, lives in Marshall, Minnesota. She's also the chair, has served as the chair of the Lyon County DFL since 2018. And she's kind enough today to join us to talk about the article that she had in The Reformer. How are you, Anita?
I am well and good. Thank you for having me, Matt. I appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. Why don't you take a quick moment here and explain to all these city folks who are listening to me what exactly is Pick Rock?
Well, I'd be happy to explain to you what picking rock means. So in some fields, there are rocky patches. There are big rocks lying on top of the soil, which is a problem because these rocks can damage the harvesting equipment, like big combines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes it's necessary to you get a crew together to pick rock in the field. You hook up a flatbed or a hay rack to a tractor, and the crew walks up and down the length of the field, back and forth, picking up all the big rocks and throwing them onto the flatbed until the field is picked clean of rocks. Glorious work, but it's work that has to be done.
Well, and it's something I worked in Iowa for a while, so I know what that is. And what I always found to be amazing when I talked to the Iowa State Extension guys is he says they move. I don't know how they do it. You'll go over a field four times, and all of a sudden on the fifth, all of a sudden a rock appears. I'm like, where did you come from?
Yeah. So he said, and it's amazing how they appear every year too. You're like, but we picked this last spring. Yeah, I know. That's how it goes.
It is. But I mean, it is part. It's part of rural and farming. That's for sure. You get out there and these quirks and these things you have to deal with because it has to get done. I wanted to, first of all, a lot of applause to you. The article, "We Were Rural Dems and We Tried to Connect with Neighbors," here's how it went. It's an opinion piece you wrote, commentary piece that you wrote for the Minnesota Reformer a few days ago. I thought it was spectacular. And in it, you basically, and just to let you set this up for you, you basically talk about what it was like to go on out there at various events and set up a stand and how the rural Minnesotans, which is, once again, Trump territory, how they treated and reacted and interacted with you guys as the DFL.
Right. And as I note in my article, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I mean, it's pretty difficult to be a Democrat nowadays in rural Minnesota. A colleague of mine describes it as tense. I mean, there's a lot of Trump flags that are still out flying. There are pro-Trump bumper stickers yet on vehicles. Trump apparel is still being worn by a lot of people. And just the other day, a good friend who teaches at a local middle school told me that last week a group of middle schoolers were walking down the hall chanting, "Let's go, Brandon." So it's certainly not at the same level of tenseness or maybe outright hostility as it was last year during the 2020 election. Last year, I published a series of articles in The Reformer about the Lyon County DFL's experiences then as we went around to local communities with our pop-up tent. And as I wrote in those articles in 2020, I mean, if I had a dollar for every expletive that was yelled at us or obscene gesture that was directed our way, I would be a rich woman. Or if not a rich woman, then at least one who could buy herself a very nice dinner in a swanky restaurant somewhere. But this summer, it certainly was not at that level of hostility as we went around to local communities with our pop-up tent. As I wrote in the article, this summer, the number of friendly responses actually outweighed the negative responses, you know, sometimes by a 10-to-1 margin. For every middle finger or thumbs down or F Biden that was shouted at us, there were 10 friendly waves or friendly honks, thumbs up signs, or thank yous from people. And that's really what I think the value is for the DFL to get out in rural communities. It provides support for those who are Democratic or who lean that way, at least. it gives them the courage to, in a sense, continue voting blue. They realize they are not alone. I mean, it can be intimidating and discouraging to be a Democrat out here. In Lyon County, the county I live in, generally it's 30 to 35% Democrat, 65 to 70% Republican. So clearly, Democrats are in the minority. But I also want to point out that there's another way to look at those numbers. It also means that 30% of the people out here are DFLers.
Yeah.
One out of every three people is a Democrat. So we're not insignificant. And I think it's important to support that 30%.
And by the way, can I just make sure we clarify, are those the people that voted or all people?
Those are the people that voted.
So and so there's
but Pat, Matt, I mean, in the last election, 90% of eligible voters in Lyon County voted.
Well,
so,
and what the only point I'm making on that is this, is that it's, I'm not saying that it gets to a 50-50 split by any means, but as you say, it's 30% that voted, and as well, there is another 10% that didn't vote, who might be Trump fans that just decided they didn't want to, don't care about politics, or might be Democrats, DFLers, who basically just said, you know what, I'm not going to pay attention because I already know, in this, at least in this county, that where things are going to go. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it has to be kind of absorbed in. It makes you understand and appreciate the situation. Because one of the things I want to make sure I mention is that the DFL used to rule in rural Minnesota. They used to be very strong. And there's a lot of things that have happened. I would make an argument, the fact that the news that is broadcast, whether that's the local radio station, the local TV station, what is done is for the most part, and I got a lot of friends that work in media out in rural Minnesota, it is filtered through a very Republican sieve. Most of the, a lot of the local newspapers are very Republican now. You've had Republican politicians do a very good job of basically saying they hate you, they're the Metro, and that's them, we're us, and that's that. And that has been very successful as a rallying cry. And I will also say the DFL has... The DFL has to understand, I understand that a lot of the city, 55% of the population of the state is in the Twin Cities metro area, which means there's a lot of DFLers that represent the Twin Cities metro area. But the issues that are strong and important for the metro area not only might just be irrelevant for rural Minnesota, but can actually be weaponized against rural Minnesota voters because it looks as if it is something that is totalitarian, authoritarian, socialist, whatever you want to label it, it does not relate to rural Minnesotans. And so I think there has been a message disadvantage, a detachment from metro area DFLers to rural Minnesota. Of those three, do you feel as if that's a fair assessment of how the DFL has lost their footing out in rural Minnesota?
Yes, I do think you're right. I think a lot of the media out here is of a conservative bent, and I also think people like to whip up this antipathy towards, you know, metro elites telling us rural folk what to do. I do think you're correct in that assessment.
And one of the things I think is interesting too, Anita, is, you know, they'll on one side say, keep your metro noses out of our local business. Okay, fine, that's okay. But at the same time,
but we want your metro money.
Exactly. They want the metro. They love their metro taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
One of the Republicans saying, oh, we're going to secede to South Dakota. I'm like, bon voyage.
Yeah.
South Dakota.
Exactly. See how that works out for you. Yeah.
You'll be asking to be back here in a few hours.
No kidding.
But I will also add in is that that at the same time, a lot of Republicans have no problem sticking their nose in the metro area business. I was just talking to someone about the $15 minimum wage that was passed in Minneapolis and how rural Republicans were furious. How dare Minneapolis? But yet there doesn't seem to be any kind of self-evaluation of the hypocrisy of screaming at the one side, don't stick your nose in our business, but you need to get in that metro area and stick your nose in theirs. I think that people have lost that. It's like, I mean, it's almost as if the people have said, well, who cares about what's going on in the Twin Cities? That's there. What's going on here? But the Republicans have done a very good job of weaponizing you know, the metro area against rural Republicans, and it's hurt the Democrats in statewide elections.
I would agree. I think we need to get back to the idea that we need each other. We have a symbiotic relationship. Sure, we might produce the crops, but we need the metro to, you know, process and consume what we mm-hmm. produce. So we need to, you know, get back to, like, we need each other. We balance each other out. So.
And everyone in the metro area, you listening to me right now, if you are a fool if you do not think the foundation of our state's economy is agriculture. It has been. It is still today. And we have a lot of other great industries. 3M, they make great tape. And a lot of other things. The medical industry, of course, in this state is top notch. We've had technology in the state. But agriculture, pound for pound, is the breadwinner in the state of our economy. So you can't just sit here and say, oh, I'm just going to ignore them. As long as we take the metro area, Duluth and Rochester, we're fine. It doesn't work like that. And you have to understand, you can't be that ignorant towards what's going on out there. Let's brings us to the next question. I have done a little segment called Democrat of the Day for the last 5 years, where I have brought on Democrats, especially in rural Minnesota, and I've tried to get metro area DFLers, not the politicians, but the voters, who might be like me in a relatively safe DFL seat. I think the last time around, it was an 80-20 DFL win. And so you do have some of these areas where we have people who want to volunteer, want to help out. I'm like, great, get into rural Minnesota. Get out there, because we need to have a better chance at winning in these districts. Unfortunately, I think part of the problem we've had is it doesn't seem the DFL leadership, and I know I don't want to put you in an uncomfortable position because of your position in Lyon County, but I will just bluntly say, when I call some DFLer who's supposed to be a DFLer, and the first thing they say to me is, I'm not a DFLer, I'm a moderate Republican, but just no one else wanted to run. The first thing I say to myself is, how in the world are you even running a candidate here? If this is the image that you're portraying, that you can't find anyone who wants to be a proud DFLer to run the race, so you basically find someone who's just going to badmouth your own party. How do we turn this around? How do we get better candidates? There are DFLers out there who are great candidates. It's just we just don't be able to see to be able to track them to run in these districts.
yes. You're right, Matt. That's a hard problem, is finding people who want to run, because, to be honest, sometimes it's discouraging. You look at the past years and what are the margins? Well, you're probably going to get 30-35% of the vote. So are you willing to run knowing that the odds are that you'll lose, at least for now? But I think it's important to just keep fighting. You can't concede this territory. Just
can't.
Like, throw up your hands and say, well, forget the rural counties. Forget it. We don't need them. You have to keep fighting. And maybe you don't win this year. Maybe you don't win in 2 years. Maybe it takes a decade to start chipping away and winning back rural voters. But you got to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, you do. You do. And my point, I think, is the one thing I get frustrated is if you have someone out there who the first thing they're saying is, well, I'm not a DFLer, but I'm running as a DFLer, you know, okay. I don't know if you understand how this works, but no, I agree with you. It's not easy. It's an intimidating thing. So let's talk about this then. You are on the front line. You are there. You know what issues are DFL issues that will resonate. What is the message the DFL can put out there to help win again in rural Minnesota?
Well, to my mind, and others may disagree with me on this, I think we have to hammer away at all the positive things Democrats are doing for Americans, for Minnesotans, for rural Minnesotans specifically. Don't get into ridiculous, time-wasting debates, because facts and reason, honestly, don't seem to make much difference nowadays anyway. You know, just keep to a relentlessly positive message. Don't get distracted by the vitriol and the nonsense coming from the other side. Keep pointing out all the things that Democrats are doing or are trying to do to improve rural America. And let me give you an example. Point out how the infrastructure bill proposed by President Biden and recently passed by Congress provides desperately needed money for rural Minnesota to fix its aging infrastructure. It's money to upgrade our roads. It's money to upgrade our aging water systems. And a lot of small towns around here are dealing with this very problem. And it includes $65 billion for broadband access with the goal of improving internet services for rural areas. I mean, everyone out in rural Minnesota knows that improved internet service is desperately needed. And if that wasn't clear before, the pandemic made it abundantly clear. Mm-hmm. I've heard stories of students in rural Minnesota school districts having to sit in the parking lot of a local library or the McDonald's, for crying out loud, to have Wi-Fi access to get their homework done when schools were doing distance learning. I mean, that's ridiculous. Point out that Democrats know these are needs, and they did the hard work to make this happen and get this bill passed.
And then go on offense.
Point out that Representative Fischbach of Congressional District 7, which is my district, she voted against the infrastructure bill. Apparently she doesn't know or she doesn't care that rural Minnesota needs this money. It needs to improve its infrastructure. It needs better internet service. And she votes no. You know, it's not the Democrats who are the naysayers and obstructionists. Democrats are trying to get things done. They're trying to improve rural Minnesota. They are willing to invest in rural America. And the GOP just sits there and says, no. So I think it's important to hammer away at this message. Just keep pointing out all the positive things that Democrats are actually doing to improve people's lives.
You know, two things I want to bring up. First of all, on your point about Fischbach, the thing which I makes me mad is when then she takes credit for the bill that she just voted against.
Oh, yeah.
Which she will. We all know it. I mean, the countdown begins now on her, on the bag of soup down in one, on Chinny McChin up in eight, and Emmer. It all begins now on when all four of them are going to be like, well, thank God I was here to build this bridge that I voted against.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Look at all this money I got for my district.
And you just got to hammer away, because that's the thing, which is when I talk about that disconnect and I talk about the inability to see the hypocrisy, is that they applaud, yay, thanks for voting against Joe Biden's bill. But when that bill all of a sudden fixes the bridge in their town and they say, well, thank God I was here to do it. They say, they should be saying, wait a minute here. You didn't do that. They go, yay, thank you for somehow mysteriously funding this bridge that you voted
right.
against funding.
Here's me in a picture of the ribbon cutting of this new bridge. Yeah,
exactly.
Whatever. Yeah.
The other thing is in broadband, you bring up broadband and let's just talk. I mean, city council meetings, county official meetings, the medical issues, for goodness sakes, broadband is such a necessity. And I can't tell you how frustrating it's been for me, because I know that would help if the DFL were to put broadband from border to border in this state and get a solid network and get it done. And if that means doing co-ops, I don't care how we do it, we just get it done. Needless to say, the DFL has actually put money in budgets and has tried to do this. And it's the GOP themselves that have gutted those broadband funds year after year on these bills. And it's kind of one of those things that is one of those. If I'm the DFL, the message I'm putting out right now, and I'm hammering every day until election time next year, is that the DFL, Joe Biden and Democrats brought you broadband in Minnesota. And I think that if
Like everywhere there's Wi-Fi, we should be like Wi-Fi brought to you by Joe Biden and the Democrats. Yeah.
I want to go back to something else I mentioned as well. And just really last point on this before we get into an appeal to get people out there, for goodness sakes, is that I'm going to read a little story here in the Minnesota Coronavirus Update. And in this story, it basically the numbers break down. It's very disheartening that in Republican districts, coronavirus is three times worse than it is in Democratic districts. And it's even so bad that even really red districts like yours, where it's a 70-30, it's worse in your district than in Republican districts, which are like 55-45. It is the redder the district, the more likely you are to have COVID, get sick, die. It is really disturbing. The reality, though, is you can't get that message out there. That news story, which is legitimate, won't be covered by any of the major national right-wing channels. Local media won't touch it outside of a few very limited exceptions. And so the reality is, here is a story which basically shows the Republican Party is putting Democrat their own voters on a platter to to die for their own cause just so they can make things miserable. And yet it won't be heard by the people that would say, wow, why are you guys so bad at this in the Republican districts? That is a huge problem. We have to do a better job of hammering away to make sure the stories and the news that's covered, especially when it's for the public good, is actually getting covered.
Right, right. Just keep hammering away. So, like, look at what we are doing. Look at how the Democrats are improving your lives. And just not get distracted by all these other, you know, silly debates. Forget all that nonsense. Take control of the narrative. Go on offense. Keep staying positive.
Let's talk about getting, once again, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, we need to get the people, I mean, it's great that we have a lot of safe DFL seats here in the Twin Cities. And by the way, it's, I mean, that doesn't mean don't help out your local DFLer. Cheryl Youakim is my representative. I love her. Ron Latz is my senator. I love him. Of course, I'll help out, maybe do a little door knocking for them. But you have a year now where you can get out into rural Minnesota and make a difference. How can people come on out there, and what can they do to help in rural Minnesota?
You know, it's funny that you bring that up, because after my article came out last week, I've had metro area people seek out my contact information and reach out to me and ask that very question. So I've actually been giving this a little bit of thought prior to today. And honestly, what immediately pops into my mind is, move here. Move out to rural Minnesota. And I say that half in jest, you know, but there's a little bit of truth in it, too. You know, there's such a preponderance of progressive-minded people in the metro area. You know, it's a little top-heavy, so to speak. So spread the wealth a bit by moving out to greater Minnesota and help us balance the scales, right? Yeah. I mean, with the real estate market the way it is, you could sell your property in the metro and you could buy a heck of a nice place or maybe even a whole acreage out here in rural Minnesota. But
in all seriousness, that's probably not
doable for a lot of people. But one way I want to say is when rural districts, for example, Congressional District 7, when they need help with phone calling or phone banking during election season, sign up to help. I mean, you can call from the metro, from the comfort of your own home. You don't have to drive anywhere. Or if phone calling's not your thing and you are willing, come out and help us door knock during election season. Drive out to Congressional District 7 or Mankato and Congressional District 1 next summer or fall during an organized door knocking event and help us out. And finally, I will say this. A lot of metro people have roots in greater Minnesota. You know, maybe you still have family living out here that you occasionally visit or talk to. Maybe you grew up out here, but then moved to the metro. And I want to challenge you to engage your rural friends and relatives who still live out here. Engage them in conversation the next time you see them. Discuss with them why you are a progressive or why you now vote blue when you might have grown up in a Republican voting household. Don't be afraid to have those conversations. That will help us in a very tangible way to engage our neighbors and, you know, if not get them to vote Democrat, well, at the very least get them to think about the issues from another perspective. So I think those are three very tangible ways that even a metro area resident could help us out here in rural Minnesota.
Anita Talsma Gall, once again, you can find her pieces on Minnesota Reformer, and I will repost the article that I had up a few days ago that was just exceptional. And help. I mean, we need to take rural seats. And reminder, if they have to spend money, the Republican Party right now is not anticipating spending money in a lot of districts. And so if all of a sudden they do have to do that, that helps Democrats across the board, especially when it comes to the statewide races. It is so important to put up a challenge, to put up an argument in rural, the most conservative district in the state, because if they can't take that for granted, then that means monumental wins for the DFL. And that is the truth. So the Lyon County DFL, all the rural DFLers, we'll make sure we make these arguments out for you and let you know about these as we go. Anita, thank you so much for the time. I look forward to your next article. Come back if you have anything you want to share with us, any things that's coming up, any ideas for the metro area on how they can help, let us know, okay?
Sounds good. Thank you so much for having me, Matt. I appreciate it once again.
My pleasure. Anita Talsma-Gall. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.